Welcome, everyone, to the Screamcast, episode 70. I am Sean DeRager, and with me is BJ. I was going to say BJ Colangelo, but Brad's here, everybody, and he's tired. But BJ Colangelo is with us here as well.
I'm also tired, but I'm not rude.
Could be one of those shows today.
Yeah. That's okay.
Brad
needs to get some
coffee.
Makes us relatable. Because everyone's going to listen to us when they're tired at work and they just want to go home. And we're going to be like, we're just
like you.
We're also tired and just want to go.
We're going to make them more sleepy.
Because of our insane schedules, early in the morning seems to be the best time to record on the weekends, which is, of course, as any of you know, probably the worst time to record something. Because that means we got to get up early on our days off. But
it's terrible.
We're working on it. Today we have a pretty great show. We got a couple Madman movies, I, Madman, and Madman, both unrelated. And we have a couple new segments that we are going to introduce. But first, we need to get to what's on our doorstep.
Holy cow, I almost forgot.
We'll get the door. Pizza.
Best doorstep review.
Awesome. BJ.
So, there is a woman by where I live who used to run a mom-and-pop video store. So, like, pre-Blockbuster, pre-all of that. And she is currently selling off all of her collection. Normally, she has a little stand at the flea market, but she invited us out to her personal garage sale because she knew we would go nuts, and we did. There's a picture of it on our Twitter feed if you would like to check out the full look of my haul. But the things that I'm super proud of finding is that I have two VHS factory sealed copies of The Visitor with alternative box, art, which is really exciting. And I'm debating whether or not to open them and watch them. Because normally I'm one of those idiots that's like, I don't care about keeping a toy in the package. I'm going to play with it. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, now I'm starting to get into that zone where I don't want to open anything. But I did find a slight tear on the plastic for one of them. So I was like, eh, fuck it, I'll just watch it. So I rewatched The Visitor on VHS, and I had never seen it on VHS. I've only seen it on the print that Draft House put out. So it's, you know, really beautiful and looks great. The VHS print wasn't bad. Granted, it hasn't been watched ever. I was the first person to watch that tape, which is really exciting.
That's cool.
But even out after the years of just sitting there, it still looked pretty nice. So that was exciting. I also got a Phantom of the Paradise VHS tape in the factory seal that I will not open because I can watch it on the other formats that I have it. But that was an exciting find. And then I found Office Killer, which is one that had a slight tear in the packaging, so I just watched it anyway. And Office Killer has Molly Ringwald and Carol Kane in it. And it's this really weird character study serial killer kind of movie with Carol Kane. And I am pretty ride or die for her. So that was exciting to find. It's one of my favorite movies. And I highly suggest you all check it out.
Is that only that? Is that, I'm assuming that never came out on DVD.
No, it's not on DVD.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome.
And I think it's on one of the streaming services like Netflix or Hulu or something. But I don't know what it is about that movie because it, on paper, it's really not great, but I love Carol Kane. I think she's fascinating to watch. I think she has interesting, you know, features for an actor, that we don't see very often. And I love her and I love her in that role. So I think that it's fun and it doesn't get enough love.
Very cool.
Yeah,
that's all I got.
Brad doesn't like it.
I don't care. Brad doesn't like anything. Brad hates fun, so whatever.
All right, I'm gonna go ahead because Brad's probably gonna hate one of my picks at least. One of mine.
Is it gonna be Office Killer?
No, I was in Best Buy the other day and just browsing around, and for $12.99
there is you bought Pompeii again.
No, for $12.99 there is a 4-pack Shark Attack Blu-ray.
That's exciting.
Including the reason why I bought it was because it included the movie Bait, and this is a shark in a supermarket, basically.
Yeah,
and, that's amazing.
That premise, of course, is incredible on paper, and I put it in, and it's an Australian flick. I want to say Chris Hemsworth's brother's in it, but I'm not sure. He looks like Chris Hemsworth's brother. He's like a surfer dude guy with his little hot girlfriend and her dog trapped in their car.
But you're talking about Xavier Samuel?
I don't know. He looked like he could be related to Chris Hemsworth. Either that or he's just really Australian. I don't know.
Yeah, Xavier Samuel's like a pretty popular Australian actor. So that's probably who you're thinking about.
I don't know. Anyway,
He was in like Fury, and he was in some of the Twilight movies.
Oh. He had blonde hair, so...
Oh.
I think who you're thinking of is the main character, and he's pretty good. But I really liked the film. Like, I really had a lot of fun with it. I thought it was just going to be some sort of stupid kind of sci-fi channel, you know, Sharktopus type thing, which Sharktopus was also in the pack, which is had a lot of promise, but I'm not a fan of Sharktopus. But Bait, like, I think the script is really good and everything, I think, but they were limited by budget, so they had to use some CG. It's like the movie had a scope bigger than the, way bigger than the budget. Like, there's supposed to be a tsunami and these sharks. For the most part, I think they used some practical effects because the sharks, for the most part, look really good, except when you can tell they're CG. But even that CG is okay. Like, it's not horrible sci-fi channel CG like Lavalantula or whatever the hell, or Sharknado bullshit. But anyway,
see, Lavalantula was super fun.
Is it okay?
Yeah, Lavalantula is really good.
Really,
it's
nice.
Really good. If all Mike right. Mendez yeah. makes it, it's worth it.
Noted. I take back what I said about Lavalantula. But Sharknado,
you like Big Ass Spider, didn't you?
Yes,
it's the same dude.
Okay, cool. Very cool. All right, I'm excited for Lavalantula now. But anyway, I really liked Bait. It's like very, you know, the shark attacks in it have, like, you know, some weight to them. But like I said, there is some bad CGI, but I think the movie is so enjoyable that I was able to look past that the bad CGI and kind of just go with it, because it was really fun. Brad, have you seen Bait? Are you a fan of Bait?
Yeah, Bait's okay. I'm a fan. The guy that directed it directed a movie way, way back in the day. Well, I say way back in the day, I think it was like early 2000s, called Cut, with Molly Ringwald is in that.
Wow.
And that's like one of my favorite slashers, and it's like super unknown.
Cut is really awesome.
Yeah, Cut's really good.
So it sounds like this director needs some more work, because
I don't think he's really done much else.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, he treated Bait like a real film. Like, you can tell... He wasn't like, this is some, you know, stupid shark movie bullshit, like, I'm just going to wing it. Like, you can tell that he actually put a lot of thought into the camera, he had a good cinematographer. Like, you can tell the guy really cares about story. So, anyway, if you see Bait, it's not a sci-fi channel type idiotic film. I thought it was just going to be dumb fun, but it was actually, I really, really had a good time with it, so... and moving along, I on VOD got That Guy Dick Miller, and Dick Miller, one of my all of us, I think, he's probably one of our favorite character actors. But it was kind of a fun little documentary about his career, and he's interviewed now. The dude's he's got to be in his late 70s now, but really great little documentary. So it's not nothing too deep, nothing too crazy, but it's a fun kind of look at his career. And I really need to load up on. It's like I want to get every single Dick Miller movie. That's like my next collection goal. Is try to track down every single movie he's been in. But
that's a lot.
I know. It's like
But he's not even like, he's in like 500 movies, but he's like really only in the movies for just a few seconds.
But like, those few seconds are always the gold of the film, you know? Whenever he shows up, you're like, oh shit, this guy, you know? He has like the best, one of the best scenes. He steals the screen, he steals the show from Arnold Schwarzenegger in Terminator, you know?
No, I'm pretty sure he dies, so. I'm pretty sure Schwarzenegger steals the show from him.
What I mean is when he's on, you have Schwarzenegger and him on screen, and you want to see that guy, you want to spend more time with that guy, but then unfortunately, spoiler alert, he gets shot in the face.
I'd rather spend more time with the punks.
True. You know. True. Those guys look like they're having a good time.
Brian Johnson and what's the other guy's name? Bill Paxton.
Yeah. Yep. But you know, the Howling too, man. That scene with him in the bookstore, he's fantastic. He's always great. He's one of my favorite.
He's just in the Howling, not in the Howling too.
Jesus Christ. is this where we're going?
It is so early for me to handle your asshole puns. Oh, my land.
All right, and that's all I got this week because I was lucky I got those two in. But cool, that's all I got. Brad.
Nothing.
You're full of shit.
What?
You're full of
shit. Dude, I literally haven't watched anything.
Are you sick? Do we need to call someone?
I know, what's going on?
No, I mean, I've watched the movies that we're supposed to, but no, I don't really have time to watch movies anymore. So,
and this is coming from the guy that gives me shit.
Oh my god!
I'm trying to cram all these movies in.
It's because I feel like someone just told
me Santa wasn't real.
You're a procrastinator. You're like, wait, you're like finishing up a movie right before we record.
Yeah, because I can watch that guy, Dick Miller, with my kids running around. I attempted to watch one of the movies today with the kids. I'll get into that a little bit later. That was a disaster, and then I just ran out of time for the other one. I thought I would have time, Brad. I apologize.
No, it's okay.
Brad's all butthurt.
It's kind of let down.
You can feel,
also disappointed.
You can feel the disappointment rising through the microphones.
Yeah.
But next week I will be prepared 100% instead of 95%.
I don't believe you. I don't trust you anymore. You've broken our circle of trust.
Damn it. All right. Moving along. I'm actually really surprised Brad has nothing.
I didn't have anything last week either. I said Creep. That's about it.
All right.
But I didn't even watch that recently. I mean, I watched it for a little get-together, but I was just saying that because it recently was on VOD. But
I binge-watched Wet Hot American Summer, the series. I highly suggest you all do the same.
But I want to see it, too.
But watch it. It's so fucking funny.
I'm going to watch the movie first and then dive into the series. I'm going to... I want to attempt to get my wife to watch the movie.
It's going to take you like, oh, God.
But I don't think she's going to appreciate the humor. I don't know.
No. The humor in the show is exactly the same.
Oh, God, I can't wait. Okay.
The line that's been killing me that I've been using for the last, like, 2 days, because I binge-watched it in 4 hours, because that's how long it'll take you, is one of the kids says, "Eat my dick, Captain Fuckpants," and I laughed so hard that now it's part of my vernacular. Like, it's my new favorite insult, and I say it, I've said it probably 6 times.
That's fantastic. I haven't even seen the show, and I hear that insult, and I want to just use
it's
it
so
right
funny.
Away.
It's I'm like, when so can I funny.
Use this? I'm going to use it at work. At some point this next week. So if,
no,
I, get,
you
so if I get fired.
If your wife says no, if your wife says no to watching it, say it to her, see what happens.
And record it for all of us
God.
To see.
No, that'll be, I don't know, it could get hairy.
It's a really good idea.
All right, moving
it's
along.
A great idea.
I've been wanting to cover Vinegar Syndrome's Madman for quite some time. And then just recently, Scream Factory released I, Madman. And so I finally pitched it as an idea for the show, and everyone agreed. So,
reluctantly.
Very excited to talk about these two, because I had never seen them before. They've been sitting here on my to-watch pile, just waiting to be watched, waiting for a reason to watch them.
Oh my God, calm down.
Trace, it's all about being excited. You got to be excited for the show.
This is his one thing that he has, Brad.
What they had to look forward to this week, Brad.
I was like, he's already discussed having his kids running around like assholes and his wife not liking his humor. Let him have something.
So I want a little glimmer of hope each week.
Oh, wow. You got, congratulations, you got to I, Madman, and Madman.
Eat my dick, Captain Fuckpants, Brad.
There you go. See, it works. It's the best insult. It's foolproof. Except for with HR, you might get fired.
Yeah, me. There's two people at work I can use that with. Everyone else, not so much.
Well, be careful.
And then we are going to introduce a couple new segments that Brad had the fantastic idea of introducing, so I'm excited to get to those. I'll keep you all in suspense until we get to them. But first, let's dive into I, Madman.
They say that if you want to escape reality, all you really have to do is pick up a good book.
Why don't we just take it from the top, okay?
It all started with the book. One minute I was reading about him, and the next minute he was standing right next to me.
But when the escape becomes an obsession...
Tell me how they do this crap.
Stop.
It is the return to reality that becomes the challenge.
Why would anybody do such a thing?
Because he thinks that it will please me.
Lovely.
What is happening to you?
Damn it, Richard, listen to me. I'm telling you, there's going to be another killing tonight.
You can't stake out every building in the city based on some cryptic passage from a 30-year-old novel.
Going down.
I, Madman. Read any good books lately?
I really like I, Madman. I'll start off. I don't care.
Had a blast with it. I loved it.
It's so much fun, and I love that it's written by the same guy who did Nightmare on Elm Street 2, which is arguably my favorite Nightmare on Elm Street sequel, because it's so gay. But I love I, Madman. I love it. I love it. I love it. I think that it's so much fun. I love that we're getting Jenny Wright more work because she was kind of like a hot ticket for a little bit and then she kind of disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that she's great. I think that she's very, you know, she has a very authentic style of acting. And with a movie like I, Madman, where the whole movie kind of rests on whether or not the audience believes her and no one else does. And I think that she finds that balance pretty well.
Oh, sorry, I interrupted.
Oh, no, that's okay.
No, I was just going to say, she reminded me a little bit of Joan Cusack. Like a little bit. Tiny bit. Does that make any sense?
A little bit. Not nearly
There's
as, I think.
Facial expression she made. No, she's
more or less John Cusack. I would say John
Cusack.
Yeah. There's a couple of facial expressions she made during the film that I'm like, wow, that's very Joan Cusack, but that's just me.
Yeah, no, she's a very animated
performer
as well, which I don't think that many women allow themselves to do that, but she does, which I really like. I don't think I, Madman is like a great film by any means, but it's a lot of fun, and for me, that's really all I need in a movie is whether or not I have fun. And I like the kills. I think they're funny. They probably shouldn't be funny to me, but you know, they got me to cheer and laugh. So it's good by my terms.
I had a blast with it as well. I like the setup of her reading the book and her going in, us being brought into the world of the book, the 1940s or 1930s or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I love that aspect of the film that it goes there, the music used, and just, I love that setup. Like for me, I think the first half of the film is a little bit stronger than where it ends up, but I mean.
Oh yeah, there's no question.
But you got an awesome stop motion creature that comes out of nowhere. That's fantastic. And then the killer, is very, I think very, to me, very original. And, you just kind of, he's just very interesting whenever he's on screen. You know, very mysterious and yeah, I had a lot of fun with it as well. Brad?
Yeah.
How about you, Mr. Grouchy Pants?
Jesus.
No comment.
No comment at all.
You're allowed to dislike something.
I know, I dislike a lot. It wasn't bad. It was just, this is my first time seeing it. I've owned this movie for, like, every fucking format it seems. So I just
You've
never
had
got
years,
around to watching it.
Years of build-up. Years of,
Well, here's the thing, is, like, have you ever, like, you have a movie, and, like, you own it, but you, like, look at it, and you're like, I know I'm not gonna like this movie. just, like, you have that feeling in your gut, like, you're not going to like it. You can almost tell, like, you are so well versed, like, in knowledge of movies that you just know that when I pick this up and I put it in, I'm not going to like it. And then it's immediately, that's how I felt for years.
You're talking to a guy who gave Pompeii a chance.
Well, I realize that, but going in knowing something, like, going in knowing something's bad is not as bad as, you know, because I wasn't finished because you cut me off like Sorry. You cut off BJ. But, like, I want it to be good, though. Like, I was thinking, okay, I'm going to give it a shot. You know, let's do this. And it has this fantasy level in it that I don't like.
See, that's what I loved.
See, it reminds me too much of Candyman, like, with cinematography and, like, the mythology part. And, like, I like parts of Candyman, but overall, I'm not a big fan of Candyman.
We're gonna fight.
Oh my God.
I like the sequel to Candyman. I like the sequel way, way more than the original.
Okay, so you're not watching movies regularly, and now you're saying you don't like Candyman. Like,
I've never liked
Candyman.
Person?
Something's
happened. Someone's replaced Brad.
But that's how I feel about this. And it's just really dry. It feels like with this specific movie, I don't think it works, but it feels like the only world that exists is that, like, little town, like that city.
It's LA or something, right?
Right. But it feels like it's cut off from everything else and just, like, the whole interrogation thing, like, it's just like, oh, God, here we fucking go. Like, you know, someone's not going to, like, no one's going to believe her. We have to, you know, oh, is she crazy? Like, how many times is that plot device fucking used? Like, I understand this is,
well,
like,
right,
in the 80s, and it's before
say,
a lot of
yeah,
stuff.
It's...
Well,
sorry.
It's just, no. It's
I pulled
just,
a Sean.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
Really what it is. Like, you have to look at it in terms of when it came out. So yeah, now it's like, oh God, I could super cut scenes like this.
But over that, it's just a really boring movie. Like, it's just like,
it has its moments. It kind of, yeah, I see.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple cool moments, like with the killer revealing himself. And like you said, the stop motion creature, like, you know, that was okay. But overall, it's just a very, like, just bland drama. It feels like the horror is so minimal, which is not like I'm not criticizing it for that, but also, like, the director's just not a very good director, number one. I mean, I think he had a quick hit with The Gate, but if you break down The Gate, The Gate's pretty fucking crazy. I think we like it because of its batshitness. But I mean, right after this, he did The Gate 2, which is probably one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire life. You know,
that I agree with.
No, his IMDb list is like a list of shame. His most
well,
recent...
I think after that he did all sci-fi movies.
Yeah, his, like, most recent is like Spiders 3D. You know,
is that like a real movie?
2013 Spiders 3D. Yeah.
Oh, God. So, but anyways, but that's just how I feel. Ice spiders?
Mansquito.
Mansquito's so bad. Oh, God. Yep. Like, right, want that movie to be fun, and it's not.
Man, you're levels above any of these films.
I agree that it's more like, it's definitely better than, you know, your sci-fi originals, but as a movie alone for me, it's just not, it doesn't seem like it's well put together at all. It's just very bland. And, that's just how it is. I mean, the cinematography looks all right. I enjoy, like, kind of, almost want to compare it to kind of, like David Lynch style. Like, mm-hmm. it has like that Blue Velvet, Mulholland Drive feel. But I think that's also, those movies have a very fantasy level as well. I just didn't think it worked in this movie. So.
Well, wow. No, I think the movie would have worked better if they would have incorporated the fantasy a little bit more, like the book and everything, and kept going back and forth between the time periods, because, like, for me, that's what really made this movie stand up above other types of movies with a lot of tropes. Like, yeah, this movie definitely had a lot of horror movie tropes, but I think the framing of it for me was really fun, and I really kind of just got sucked in with that. And I wished, as the movie progressed, that they would have kept that up instead, you know, of having the common trope of the killer that's in the story or, you know, the movie that the person's watching or reading coming into the real world. I thought it would, I was almost hoping she would go more into that world. You know what I mean? And have that effect. But
yeah, I can agree with that. I think that would have made it a little bit more coherent, because the fantasy elements in this remind me a lot. So this is kind of a stretch, but reminded me a lot of the fantasy elements in Charlie Countryman, where, like, I see where they were going and how cool this could have been, mm-hmm. and then it just doesn't feel like it was really followed through as well as it could have been. But that doesn't mean I didn't think the film was fun. I think it's a lot of fun.
I thought it was a huge surprise for me, it's the favorite movie that I watched this week.
Well, look at that.
So I really want to dive into the special features on it, because I think it's just a fun release from Scream Factory, and so we'll see. I would love to see a little bit more about how it got made, but I did want to bring this up, Brad, especially since you've done a lot of research on Connexploitation and things like that. There's a movie that's on a marquee, like she's going down Hollywood Boulevard to find some skeezy director or producer, and on one of the marquees is a movie called Metal Messiah.
Yeah, that's the director's first movie.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's like a musical sci-fi thing. Yeah.
I was wondering if you had seen that.
It's
a 1978 flick.
Yeah, I don't think it's available on any format whatsoever, but I do have access to it.
But I thought it was interesting when... It was fun because I pulled it up. I was like, Metal Messiah, that sounds, you know, I was thinking, expecting some sort of, like, you know, metal horror type film, you know, heavy metal horror. But it wasn't, and that Connexploitation website popped up, and I was like, oh shit, Connexploitation. So, cool.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was the same director. I should have just read the little article here, but I didn't. Because I was watching the movie.
It's okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I do want to see it, though, because it sounds fun.
Heck yeah, it does.
Yeah, heck yeah, it does.
All right. I guess we're moving on to the next film, because it sounds like Brad doesn't really want to talk about
Iron Man. Well, you guys can talk about it. I'm not going to put a damper on anything, but like, it's one of those movies that you can't – there's not much to talk about, though.
No, there's not. It's very simple and very quick. It's really – a film that you either are going to like it or you're not. Like, there's really no middle ground for it.
No.
Yep. So moving along to Mad Men.
Many strange things happen around here.
There is a tale.
It was a night like tonight, many years ago.
There is a legend.
If you say his name above a whisper, he'll get you.
There is a warning.
On certain nights when the moon is full, he's out there stalking in the woods.
There is a madman.
His name is Mars. Mad Man Mars.
Mars! Madman Mars! Here we are! Come and get us, Madman!
Don't you realize you're fooling with things beyond your control?
Madman, there is no escape.
Madman Mars. You want to take a shower?
Madman, yet another derivative slasher from the 80s. About a camp.
It's awesome.
Mm. See, I'm a reverse on this one. I did not like Madman.
It's not a big summer blockbuster for Sean doesn't like
it's
it.
It's just another slasher.
Madman doesn't like you. And yeah, it is just another slasher, and it's one of like the four major campfire like camp slashers made in 1981 because they all came out at the same damn time.
I will say the one scene that made it for me was the hot tub scene and his initial belt buckle. Yeah. As they're slowly undressing, that scene was amazing.
Well, it's because you're a pervert. I think Madman is a lot of fun. It's definitely a film that was trying to capitalize off of, you know, the success of slasher films, of Friday the 13th. And then I know that it was in production at the same time as The Burning. So they ended up having to change certain things as to not interfere with, you know, kind of the whole Cropsey backstory. And
The problem that Madman has is that it came out at the same time as a ton of other slashers. So a lot of us like to dismiss it as just another slasher film, but I think that it's one of the gems that was overlooked because it was overshadowed by the big franchise sort of slashers that we all know and love now. But did I die again?
You almost did.
Almost.
I think that Madman is one of those slasher gems that we all missed out on. I mean, I wasn't even alive, so I can't really say whether or not I missed out on it. But I think that it's a really, really cool character, and I think that Madman Mars he deserves way more attention than he gets.
Yeah. Well, I liked him. I liked his involvement, but I think, I don't know. I just didn't like the, you know, the character. I don't know. It's a slasher.
You don't like movies. Here's the thing with Madman.
Convince me.
And this is the definite answer, and there's no others. is that with Madman, it is up there with some of the great horror films of the slasher genre, like Friday the 13th, Halloween. It's up there. It just was kind of a forgotten gem at that time, but it was still very, very, very successful at the drive-in and box office. Because it was backed by a lot of people. A lot of people really dug it. It was just later on, you know, with kind of this just plethora of slashers that came out, you know, like, you know, Final Exam, The Burn. I mean, Final Exam is kind of a low budget one, but Friday the 13th, you know, in the, you know, 1980, you know, coming off of Carpenter's Halloween in 78, you know, there's a ton of these things. And so I think with The Burning coming out around the same time, the campfire tale was kind of like overplayed and only a few actually succeeded. But I think Madman stands right next to those films, the great ones. It was just kind of forgotten about because I think there were just so many and they weren't as big. They weren't backed by, you know, Paramount or, you know, anything like that. This was just a low budget one that you know, stood on its own and succeeded.
Yeah.
But I think after the fact, after it was done in the theater, people were like, oh, you know, that was a fun movie. And then it never, you never really saw it again until, you know, just like a cult flick that lived on and eventually gained a cult following and people really liked it. Because, I mean, everything about this film was cool. I mean, the kills are cool, the killer's cool, you know, and it's got some great cinematography, like the little blue tinty, like, you know, him hanging out in the trees and stuff. And
that stuff was cool. Yeah.
And the shots of the house. Like, it's definitely a well-made film.
Yes.
So I think all of that, you know, together, it's a decent slasher, for sure. And I just say it's kind of sad that, you know, it took so long for it to actually get its notoriety. And, I mean, I think the director died a few years ago, so I think he got to see his movie become a cult classic.
That's cool.
But as far as it is kind of today, you know, with, you know, being on DVD from, I think, Anchor Bay at one point, and then Code Red put it out, and now Vinegar Syndrome. So I think, you know, this film's had multiple releases, and, you know, it's going to live on for quite some time, yeah, and even gain more popularity with the slasher community.
As it should.
You know, the one,
yeah, as it should.
The one thing I really actually did like about this movie that a lot of slashers don't do is I feel like it took, like, there's moments of suspense that are actually suspenseful where they take the time to really show, like, these kids being stalked a little bit. And it allows these moments and to kind of breathe a little more rather than going fast paced in your face. I did appreciate that. I did notice that it was kind of taking a little more time with the characters instead of them just being, you know, disposable characters. There was actually a lot kind of put into, you know, each of the counselors there with what they're doing and how they are. And, you know, so I did appreciate that. There's certain things I appreciated, but I think for me, slashers aren't my favorite horror genres, so they all kind of run together. But nope. There's things that I think that it did.
You also did well. Hate fun.
Yeah, you truly hate fun. Dude, horror films and slashers are like the one thing that you don't have to worry about story. You don't have to, like, none of that is like all the stuff that we love, like, you know, cinematography wise, character development, you know, an intricate plot, you know, all that stuff we love. With slasher films, it's just mind-numbing, just fun that you can sit down and you don't have to worry about any of that. You could have the worst cinematography, the worst acting, goofy kills, and it's thoroughly enjoyable. Like I've said 1,000 times, man, a terrible horror film is so much more fun to watch than a bad drama or comedy or, you know, anything. I think action's probably right up there with it, with bad action. It's a lot of fun.
Agreed.
But, you know, I think horror films stand alone, no matter what the genre is, whatever the horror film genre is dealing with at that point, whether it's ghosts, goblins, slashers, whatever. Like, a bad horror film is so much more fun to watch. And then I think slashers is just one thing that you can watch a bunch of punk-ass kids get killed and not care about it and actually root for a killer for a change.
Yeah.
You know? You don't get to do that with many other horror films like Ghosts, Goblins, and, you know, Haunted House. You don't cheer for the house. But for slashers, like, that's why do we have so many Friday the 13th movies? It's not because of the people that are surviving. It's because we like to see Jason kill people.
Yeah.
Same thing with Michael Myers. And I think with a lot of these just one-offs with slashers, that's the reason why we like them. There's no one that we really care about in these movies. We just like watching the killer and what he does. And the most thing is we watch it for the kills. So.
I always loved the idea that slasher films are white minstrel shows. and that it's just nothing but a parody of the white experience and how fucking stupid white people are. And it's so true. Like, that's what it is. Is like, you watch there and you're like, you dumb white people running up the stairs when you should be going out the door, and you laugh at it. And, you know, it's a very strange experience that goes into like an entire other topic of discussion. But yeah. I think that's why slashers have such a universal appeal, is because everybody can kind of make fun of them for different reasons.
Yeah, we'll see. Like, I'm glad I saw it. I definitely want to dig into it more I'll watch it again, but I just felt like I just felt like the characters weren't as entertaining. Like it was missing an entertainment value. Maybe that's just a product of his time. You know what I mean? Because like
I think the entertainment's Mad Men. It's Mad Men Mars.
I think so, but like you kind of want the characters who are getting theirs, you know, to I don't know, to be a little more. I don't know what I'm thinking, you know. But I don't know. It just didn't do it for me.
Neither do we.
Did you guys notice that there's only like there's like six camp counselors and like five campers?
It's well,
what kind of camp is this?
It's a school. It's for the gifted.
There's only five gifted people.
It's
X-Men.
Yeah, it's
that would be awesome.
It's you know that foundation thing. What is that foundation for the slow people?
I don't think it's what? Slow people.
Yeah,
what's gifted? What? This is gifted kids, like you know, smarter kids.
Well, I'm saying gifted like in a special way.
I don't think this is.
That's the opposite of.
I don't what think that this is a Special Olympics for. Camp.
No, not Special Olympics. No, I'm talking about like, God, what is that?
I think it's a camp for like kids that have excelled in school, like gifted.
Wait, so are these smart kids? Because they're really dumb in the movie.
Well, yeah, they're supposed to be smart kids, and they're the opposite.
So I thought they were a little slow.
No, they're just dumb kids that don't know how to act. That's all.
You know, that's fucked up. They should call the kids that are slow the gifted kids. They should just call the smart kids assholes. Because, I mean, think about it.
Because they are.
Yeah, I mean... I
was a gifted kid, and I'm an asshole, so...
Yeah, no, I... What's the fucking foundation for that thing? Like, Make-A-Wish? Is that it?
No.
Make-A-Wish is for kids that are dying.
Oh, okay, yeah. All right, so that's not a good example.
Let's just drop it.
All right, so anyways, these kids are stupid, and Madman deserves...
Well, the kids
they
just hang out
to get
in their
killed
cabins.
By Madman.
The kids, none of the kids die, it's all the counselors.
But they throw a rock through his window.
Well, it's that stupid Richie kid, that dumbass Richie kid.
That's what I'm saying, dude. Freaking,
there's always that dumbass Richie
spoiler
kid.
Spoiler alert, makes it through the entire movie and doesn't do jack shit. Just wanders around the woods and shows up and everyone's dead.
Well...
Am I supposed to root for this kid?
No, because here's the thing. Just because they survive doesn't mean they're going to be Laurie Strode.
I wanted him to die. They're not going to be
that character. This is before, you know, slashers really had sort of set up their, you know, rules of formulaic kills of who dies when and who the final girl is and this, that, and the other. It was before that really was set in stone. So that's also what makes Madman so interesting is that it is different than what you're used to, because for people that are just now discovering it, we've had 20 years of brunette, virgin lives, everyone dies, slutty blonde dies first.
Right.
You know, so it's just, it's a different formula.
I did notice
that,
and I didn't actually appreciate that. There was one character I was like, oh, that's the final girl, and she wasn't. So, I did appreciate that. I did notice that. You know, maybe it was, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's the circumstances of me watching it. But like I said, anytime I don't like a movie the first time, I'll give it one more chance. So I will have
maybe
one more
chance. Maybe you're just a cookie cutter basic bitch who likes their slashers to be paint by numbers.
You're a basic bitch. Damn.
I don't know.
Galen Ross is cute, though. I mean, we got her in it. Don't forget.
Yeah.
True.
She's like lead.
I think.
Thanks for blowing that off, Sean.
Part of the problem is expectation, because people were so excited for this Blu-ray and talking it up so much.
Oh my God, you're gonna hate everything. You let hype get to you so bad.
No.
I appreciate it. It follows everything.
Same thing.
If you were the first to discover these things, I think you would like them.
Probably. Probably, but that's why I have to give a movie that I don't appreciate like the first time a second chance to get the hype out of the way. You know, I would have never I always go back to the FP. That was a movie that I hated when I first saw it. Hated it. People had been talking it up, and I hated it and wanted to, I wanted to call the director and punch him in the face. That's how much I hated it the first time I saw it.
I would punch you in the face. You don't know my shit about J-Tro.
But then I gave it another chance, and it's one of my favorite movies now. So I need, sometimes I need to.
People can't let hype get to them just because you didn't, because just because people didn't see it first or they're like, they get to see it 2 years later doesn't mean the movie's bad or doesn't live up to what people are saying.
I agree.
That's just their perspective. I mean, fucking shit.
Well, this is why, like, this is why I got it. I give it another chance. I don't just write off a movie based off the first viewing. I have to give it, I give it at least one more viewing before I make a final decision. I did appreciate a lot of Mad Men. I just think for me, with all the slashes I've seen, it kind of fell into, you know, but like I said, they're all doing the same thing. So I don't know what I'm expecting. You know.
Rewatch it.
Rewatch it.
Fine.
That's your homework.
Fine. And you know, you're gonna, and this is what we're gonna do is this new segment we have. I'm gonna pick slashers that no one knows about, and you're gonna fucking love them, Sean.
Shit. Okay.
You are going to jack off to these slashers.
I don't think I'll be doing that.
Wait, does that? Oh shit! I said that off. I thought I wasn't pointing at the mic.
You're the one who's flat.
Let's talk about the theme song.
Theme song.
I can sing it. You want me to sing it?
A plus. No, I'll splice.
I want you to sing it.
God damn.
I can sing it.
Splice it.
I can sing it.
Brad, sing it. Sing it, Brad.
Nah, it's okay. I'll sing it at the end.
Sing it, Brad.
No, sing it at the end. So, but anyways, Mad Men, definitely worth the price. Shit ton of special features. It's definitely better than the Code Red DVD if you have that. It's a better print. There are some, they did use a print that had some hardcore scratches in it, though.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Which was, I don't know, I've said countless times, I'm always on the fence about that because it gives that natural print look, but is that the only print that exists? Like, you can't use something else for that moment because they're really bad.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's two characters talking, and the one character has these like four purple scratches across his face.
Yeah,
and then goes to the next person is totally beautiful and pristine.
So I wonder if that's I can't remember if Vinegar Syndrome said that's the only print in existence or what. But
I think.
What is that noise?
crap! Because I remember
Ian
talked about it.
I did read something about it, and I think
maybe
I did read something about it, and I think they're saying did they use it from the negative?
Yeah, more. I mean, they always do.
But I think so. That was the only thing, the only one available.
I think that might have been what it was.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see him doing
from the camera negative. The original camera negative was scratched.
Yeah. All right. That's what it is. Scanned and restored in 4K from the 35 original camera negative.
Yeah.
So yep.
That shows you that Code Red doesn't do that like they say they do, by the way. Because the Code Red release would have scratches on it, too. Just saying, folks.
God, you hate them so much. You want to hate fuck them, don't you?
He totally does. He totally does.
Here's the thing is that they get all this credit, and like they have these fanboys, and he's an asshole to his customers. He doesn't deserve it.
Oh,
he really doesn't.
He's a dick to everyone. He's just a negative, nasty person.
Once you come in contact with him, then you'll understand that you're going to be on the Brad side of the fence.
I buy his movies when they come out from Screen Archives, but as far as dealing with him directly, hell no. I will never buy directly from Code Red, ever.
Well, nope. I'm too poor to buy anything, so.
Luckily, Shockma is streaming. Shockma.
Thank God. How would I have ever lived my life without Shockma streaming?
Oh, Shockma's amazing. All right, well, did any of you dig into any of these special features in the Vinegar Syndrome release of Mad Men?
No.
Well, of them, it seems that some of them are kind of pulled from the old DVD.
Okay.
So, but I mean, it's fun because they go over the mythology of Mad Men Mars a little bit, just kind of the behind-the-scenes stuff. They have the Hysteria Continues commentary, which is always, you know, a lot of fun. And they have the 30-minute documentary that's pulled from the Code Red DVD.
Well, there's a 90-minute documentary.
Yeah, like, that's the 30-year thing. Yeah. They did some new stuff with the actors and everything. That's okay. But for the most part, it's a lot of it's from the Code Red DVD.
Okay.
I don't think they put the song from Mortician on there though, which was a little disappointing because actually some band like cover or did a song for Madman Mars, a death metal band, and it's a lot of fun. So
very cool. I feel like if I watch this 90-minute documentary, I may
you may like a movie.
I may come out on the other side with more appreciation. Well, that's happened with certain movies I didn't like. I watched the making of,
and I completely agree with you. You get
more appreciation for what it went into the film. And
I agree with you. Watching sometimes movies on a second try is a little bit better because you can't let the hype get to you. But sometimes just hearing an overbearingness of it, it can kind of make your mess with your expectations. I suggest people don't listen or read reviews until they actually see the movie.
Yeah.
And then go along with the hype. But if you're on Facebook and Twitter, it's kind of hard to get away from
it's
it.
Everywhere.
You know?
Right.
So.
I would also suggest if people really like Mad Men, or even if they don't like it, Killer POV interviewed Madman Mars.
Oh, nice.
I think about a month ago. And he's got some good stories. So.
Cool.
Check that out. The guy is crazy and super awesome.
Nice. All right, well let's jump into these two new segments, you guys.
New segments.
The first let's start
new
off
sexments.
With
sexments.
Cuz you're a pervert too.
Oh god. Wait, save it for the cream cast. Save it for the cream cast.
You're the biggest pervert though.
Yeah, but I don't claim to not be.
I'm talking to Sean.
Be.
What?
Oh, just kidding.
But you are too, BJ.
That's
we have our moments.
I think all mine's just existence.
I'm a smut peddler. I have no qualms in that. I didn't mention that at that flea market sale, I did buy big box VHS porn.
Hell yes.
And it's awesome. High-waisted panties and teased hair for everyone.
Nice. All right, let's move into our first new segment called Stream Screams.
Nate, wake up!
There's something very important I forgot to tell you.
Don't fucking scream at me!
You scream, I'll break your neck.
Don't scream, miss. Don't scream.
And I'm gonna let Brad introduce this one because Brad, you contacted us with a couple ideas and
The guy that doesn't, support digital came up with this fucking idea.
I know. I was super surprised.
I actually talked to Brian Sauer last night a little bit about it. But anyways, we had the digital discussion recently and. Brian Sauer is very much on this like voodoo kick, and we had to ask because he was going nuts about digital codes. I was like, "What the fuck is Brian Sauer doing with these fucking digital codes? Jesus Christ!" So, anyways, we talk a little bit about it, and then I look at all my Blu-rays, and I'm like, "Oh shit, I have like a shit ton of digital codes," and I'm like, "Wait, I can actually probably use these like when I'm out on the road or something. I can have all these movies on my phone, because they basically unlock into a cloud, and then." Talking to Brian a little bit further, and he's like, hey, they have a lot of stuff on there that's not available on DVD or even Blu-ray. And so I'm like, oh shit. So I'm going through there, and they just have like a shit ton of cheap, to purchase, like HDX, which is like 1080p quality or extreme 1080p. And then they have the HD and then the standard definition. But there's a lot of films on there that have never made even a DVD appearance in the U.S. So I was like, oh, shit, then maybe we should, incorporate maybe – because, I don't think people listen to our podcast because they're physical media freaks. I think they just like movies. Yeah. So if you like movies, we're going to talk about even more movies now that, aren't recently on DVD or Blu-ray that you can have at your disposable for a cheap price. And I think our first one we're going to talk about here is a Lionsgate movie, which already tells you that Lionsgate's very apprehensive about putting movies on even DVD, it seems. So they're not really going through their catalog and putting stuff out on Blu-ray. But there is a 1080p to purchase for $7.99. Only $7.99. Paper House, which is kind of a older fantasy children's horror film that is quite loved by quite a few people. It's definitely kind of a cult favorite. But it's kind of sucks because I don't even think this thing has hit DVD in the States.
I don't think it has either.
I think the UK had a DVD of it, but yeah. As far as DVD or Blu-ray and a scarce VHS, like you can get for $7.99 HDX from Lionsgate Paper House
and
on Vudu.
It looks fantastic.
It looks like they probably just grabbed the print because there's a lot of splotches and scratches in it. Looks like they might have just transferred the print, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, it looks pretty good, though. I mean, I was expecting it to look horrible, but...
No, yeah, it looks fairly decent. But I saw a Paper House when I was very, very young, and it's always one of those things that it's a kind of iconic cover with the little girl reaching up with the weird-looking house in the background. But I saw it, and I kind of forgot about it completely, and I keep on seeing it pop up every once in a while, like on lists and stuff like that. And then when I was going through the Vudu, that was one of the films that I really, really, really wanted to talk about and cover. And that's what we're going to do now.
Cool. Yeah, the list you sent me. I mean,
don't mention them. There's secrets.
No, I know.
There's secrets,
guys.
Secrets.
Start plunging the depths of Vudu because I was shocked at some of these showing up. You know, and I did a recent purge of DVDs, and I got stuff like that's not available in HD or not available on Blu-ray. I got like Ice Pirates in HD now, which is one of my favorite movies. Red Sonja in HD now. I mean, come on. So
yeah, Red Sonja. Yeah. So anyways, awesome. But yeah, I mean, even if okay. upgrades of DVD to Blu-ray or you know HD, I should say, but you know, I'm not saying that none of these films, like the ones that you mentioned, who's Ice Pirates by, like Warner Brothers or something?
Yes.
Yeah, see, like, with those, I think eventually, one day, they'll be on Blu-ray. But
yeah.
I can't foresee anything from Lionsgate because they literally have not mentioned it or have done or budged on anything.
Do you think that they did some sort of deal with Vudu? Because it's all, like, artisan Lionsgate-type flicks, most of them.
I don't know. Maybe
that are HD. You know,
the thing is that with a company like Lionsgate, as big as they are, you know, they make smart choices, and mass producing Paper House on Blu-ray is probably not a smart decision,
right?
Because it's not going to sell a lot, and they're not going to do limited prints because that's not the kind of company they are, and they don't license their movies out to other people. So the chances of this getting a Blu-ray release are very, very slim. It's just cheaper for them to slap it on a digital service and not pay anything to mass produce these Blu-rays and then completely undersell. Because I honestly can't even see this thing maybe even selling 500 copies, let alone 1,000 or more.
But it's worth watching, man.
It's a great movie.
It's a wonderful film.
So, but BJ, you're kind of quiet.
What are your thoughts on Paper House, BJ?
Paper House is one of my favorite movies. I am a sucker for what I like to call transitionary horror, which is sort of the horror films you watch when you're too old for Scooby-Doo, but you're not quite ready for, like, a crazy gore fest film or something. I don't know. And I love Bernard Rose is his name, yes?
Yes.
Yeah, Bernard Rose.
Okay, thank you. I love Bernard Rose's directorial style and the fact that Paper House, on paper, no pun intended, really shouldn't work. It shouldn't. It's really out there. It's extremely complicated. But it flows so effortlessly, and it's a beautiful film. I love any film that kind of deals with adolescence and does so without being insulting to those that are going through the experience. Because I saw Paper House when I was about, 10 or 11. So it was about the same age as the girl in the movie. So it kind of struck me pretty hard that, horror was something that I liked, because I really identified and connected with this film on kind of a visceral level when I was that age. I just think that the fantasy horror genre is one that's not explored nearly as often. And I think Paper House does a fucking fantastic job at, bridging kind of those two worlds mm-hmm. together. It is a shame that it probably won't ever get like a Blu-ray release, because that's a film that I would love to hear special features and, an interview on, just because it's such a strange film, and it's the people that like it are like really, really into it and love it. And there's almost kind of an emotional love to it. Yeah. And the people that don't like it, oh God, they hate it.
Really?
They like really, oh my God. Yeah. The people who don't like Paper House like violently hate that movie. Wow. Which I love films that are super polarizing, and Paper House is definitely one of them. And I don't want to say that, if you don't like it, then you don't get it, because I don't think that's what it is. I just think that it's a movie that, sorry, traffic. I think that it's a movie that isn't going to resonate with everybody, but for the ones that it does kind of touch, it becomes something that is pretty cherished by that target audience.
Well, when I first read when Brad, because I'd never heard of it before, and Brad, let me know this is what we're going to be, this is the movie we should check out for this segment, and I read about it, and it's the synopsis didn't do anything for me. I was like, oh God, here we go.
No, it sounds really bland.
Yeah, because it's the synopsis just says, oh, there's a young girl, she's alone, she through her dreams meets an ill boy what she draws in her composition book becomes a reality in this dream world. Basically, that's it. But there's so much more going on in this film, and it's not a simple story, but there's just so much going on emotionally, I think, in this film. And
there's a lot of depth to this movie.
Ton of depth. And the actress, this young actress, is just, she carries the movie. She's so good. And all the relationships are believable. It's more of a drama, really, than a horror. It's like a drama with like a tinge, an undertone of horror and some fantasy, like a less fantastical Labyrinth. You know what I mean? I was like, because I was watching it, and I tried watching it with kids, and they were all whatever. Just, I don't know if it's too much sugar or Minecraft or whatever, but it took me like
too much sugar.
It took me like 2 hours to get through like half hour of this film. Number one, I got a 3-year-old running around, and he's potty training, and every 2 minutes he says he has to go pee every 2 minutes just to get a Skittle. So I'm trying to manage that, and he wants to go outside, and then the dog.
So you give
candy
for your kid when they go pee? Is that how you bribe them?
You bribe them. Yeah, you give them rewards. Oh. So
but you can't give him rewards if he doesn't pee.
Right, no, that's the thing. Then he doesn't pee, okay. Then I say you don't get a Skittle, and he gets mad, throws himself on the floor. My life's ridiculous right now. But anyway.
You let him throw himself on the floor.
Exactly. Fine, kid, whatever. Let me try back to watch this movie. So I'm watching the movie, and I got a kid screaming, and I'm trying to watch this. So
all I picture is, like, Noah sitting on the floor, and you just throwing Skittles at his face.
Shut up, kid.
Shut up. Here's a Skittle.
I mean, this is why I should just move to LA and be your nanny. Let's exactly. Just be real here.
So I abandoned this last night. It wasn't working, and I finished it this morning. And I gotta say, sometimes, because I was running out of time, and I was like, I was like, normally I would just be like, gosh, maybe I just can't finish this film and whatever. But I wanted to finish this movie so much. I wanted to get through it, and I really want to sit down and watch it all the way through. Again, with no interruptions, because I feel like I've missed certain things. But I think this is just a wonderful movie.
It's one of those movies that easily could.
there's so much going on, and the score, like Hans Zimmer's involved with the score, and this is before
It's before he became like a
score factory and started doing shit. His company started doing shit with Michael Bay and releasing the same exact score movie after movie. But
whoa,
this is back when Hans Zimmer was really good. And
whoa, those are some fighting words.
God,
he's
dude.
Become kind
I'm
of predictable.
I'm glad you said that, because that's going to take the heat off of me with the whole, I hate Madman thing.
I like Hans Zimmer. I like
Sean's head in a
I like Hans Zimmer's earlier scores. That's all I'm saying. This was a wonderful. This is wonderful.
Like, wait. Let's just
hipster.
Let's just stop for a second. Because that's a huge statement, dude. I mean,
dude, Pirates of the Caribbean, he uses that same kind of score in like the Transformers films.
All right, okay, let's just take, like, for example, Dark Knight Rises. Oh. I mean,
those scores are horrible.
Let's take the entire discography of Danny Elfman. Everything Danny Elfman has ever made sounds exactly like the things he's made before.
And I'm not a fan of Danny Elfman either.
Well, fuck you. You're wrong.
I don't like Danny Elfman either, so I'll stick with Sean.
You're
anyway,
but seriously,
anyway.
Dude, the fucking score to The Ring is like one of the most haunting things in the world.
That's okay.
Truth.
Dude, what? Okay. Okay, you tell me a composer that you really like.
John Williams for Star Wars.
That's exactly what I was going to say. In that same voice. I'd be like, oh, looks
I like, but I see it. I like a lot of John Williams' earlier stuff. A lot of these composers, I like their earlier stuff. Hans Zimmer's earlier stuff, great.
What year? Like 95 when he's like doing like, you know, the Peacemaker and Crimson Tide and shit.
Crimson Tide's a wonderful score.
Yeah, so is everything else he does pretty much.
He's a talented composer. I'm just saying. I'm trying to give this movie Paper House a compliment here. We're going on a rabbit trail, but
fine.
Anyway, what I'm talking about is Hans Zimmer has a company, and that he has other composers that work with him, and all that stuff that company composes, like the Transformers score, Pirates of the Caribbean, very big and bombastic, and those are very predictable. Hans Zimmer on his own, I think, has some merit. I'm not a fan of his newer stuff because I think that I like stuff that's more of a musical flow, more of like themes that go along with the music. The Dark Knight scores are very, they go along with the films, but I would never buy those scores, if you know what I mean. Like the Paper House score, I would definitely want to track that down and listen to it on its own. That's all I'm saying.
If you would listen to these scores by themselves, I think you'd be saying something different.
I do listen to these scores by themselves.
No, I'm saying like if you heard the scores before you actually watched the movies. Because I think the movies are putting a negative aspect to it.
Agreed.
Because, I mean, dude, like seriously, Transformers sucks. But if you listen to the score to Transformers, that shit is fucking good.
But no, like, I say it's very similar. It sounds very similar to like the Pirates of the Caribbean, and that's all I'm saying.
Well, yeah, because it's coming from the same composer. Everything that fucking Mozart wrote sounds like Mozart, and everything Beethoven wrote sounds like Beethoven.
I really hate that my favorite bands all sound, you know, all their albums kind of sound like it's them.
Yeah, but for a film, I guess I score a composer a little bit different for a film because you're trying to create something new to enhance the story.
Well, they're choosing the composer because, hey, I like your style, and we feel that this film is in the same style as something else. So we want the music to sound the same.
The Paper House score was very original. I loved it. So there's certain composers that will surprise every time and come out with something, you know, really great, and it's a really great score.
But let's just go back to what BJ said. I mean, Danny Elfman, if you want someone
to go pop, 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 pop,
but, it,
pop.
But that's not the joke. But I'm saying, I don't like Danny Elfman, but if you need something to do like fantasy level or, you know, kind of like childhood fantasy, then yeah, you would pick Danny Elfman. I don't like Danny Elfman's scores either, but if I did a movie like that and I wanted some kids' music, I would fucking pick, Danny Elfman. The same thing as if I wanted to do military, I would pick Alan Silvestri. Because, you know, he's done, you know, like Predator and shit like that.
Yeah.
like he knows how to do like military music. The same thing as I think he did like Captain America and stuff. But that's what they put those on. If you need something big and epic, like world changing, then you're going to pick Hans Zimmer. Easy.
Yep.
Right. Anyway, back to Paper House. All I was saying was, as a fantastic score,
so high.
The look of the film is really great. The art direction of this film was so surprising, because I feel like this was a lower budget film, but what they did just looks incredible. It holds up today against any movie that would come out today. Even like the effects, special effects, don't seem dated. It works for the film. It works for what's going on thematically, and I just think it holds up. Like, I can't wait to. I actually want to sit down with the older kids and watch this without the distraction of a 3-year-old. Which, by the way, just came into the room. He's up. The 3-year-old is up. Everyone,
throw a Skittle at him.
So anyway, I think everyone, you know, check out Paper House. It's super cheap. You might as well. I mean, it's on Vudu and like $7.99. You know, you can rent it for like $5.99, but spend the other $2 and just own this thing, because I think this is, you'll get a lot of mileage out of this film, in my opinion. And see, I'm hyping a fucking movie, and now someone's gonna say, "Oh, you said the movie was really great. And I thought it sucked."
No, because we don't have listeners like that.
We don't. No.
But no, it's one of those things that it hits a fantasy level, to remind you of nightmares from your childhood. And, and that's one thing that I've, really, really dug about it quite a bit. Also the fact of how well the picture of the paper house matches the actual paper house.
Yeah.
Like, it's quite ridiculous, and it's just, they didn't take kind of just a kid's drawing and then just did something completely different. They matched it up, you know, obviously the designing of the house came first, but, you know, just, it looks, it's great set design. It looks incredibly, like, it looks like a theme park ride. Mm-hmm. But it works because of that nightmare level. Like, you don't ever have to determine whether she's in her dream or not, because they do the dreamlike sequence just so well through the entire movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But yeah, I was really
Paper House is awesome.
It's great. It's great. So, all right.
Is it all? No one else saying anything about Paper House?
Well, I just saw it, and I know, just talking about how great it is.
I saw it. I just watched it. I don't know anything about the history of it or anything like that. Unless you guys know about, you know.
Well, I mean, I think a fun thing to talk about is, you know, this is obviously directed by Bernard Rose. We spoke about who directed Candyman, which I mentioned mm-hmm. earlier, and it's weird because you can tell that it's Bernard Rose. But I dig this way, way more than I do Candyman. But I think it still has that same fantasy aspect mm-hmm. to it. And the fantasy itself, not the story, is more horrific than the actual story, it seems. Like, what is going on with the kid mm-hmm. and kind of just her story and where she's going, rather than actually seeing all the horror that's unfolding for her. And also, it just takes this wicked turn. Like, it's creepy from the beginning, but it takes a huge wicked turn once the person in the dream comes about.
Yes.
And that whole part is extremely terrifying, especially when he has her on the hill.
Mm-hmm. Jeez.
Like, and I was like, oh my God. Like, I completely forgot about that. And rewatching it, I rewatched it with Willow, and she really liked it. But she was, you know, she's watched the horror films quite a bit now. She watches new stuff, she watches old stuff, and you know, she'll grip my arm for a lot of films. But a lot of older films, she doesn't do that. But she did with this one, which I thought was pretty interesting mm-hmm. to see what really scares a kid. Because I think the dream sequences that this film goes into are very reminiscent to what happens in real life.
Yes.
because I've had countless dreams like that where I've, you know, making up buildings in my head and what it looks like and visiting. And, you know, it's just a really, you know, well written and also just from paper to screen, script to screen, just really, really well done.
Well, that's also, you just made the point about like making buildings or whatever. And that's why I'm kind of surprised that your kids weren't all that interested, Sean, because it's like predating Minecraft. Like,
yeah,
you can write it out and it becomes real and it's tangible.
They're in a weird phase right now. But I think, like I said, most of the distraction was the three-year-old kind of, he was the wrench in the mix.
Kind of just ruining everything.
That's all right.
I think what kind of resonated the most with me for Paper House is that, you know, obviously I said that I watched it when I was about the same age as a character, but I was also going through some really intense and heavy shit at that age. And it felt like my dreams and like sleeping was really the only like sanctuary that I had. And then even that wasn't safe because I don't sleep and I get night terrors and I still do and it's a mess. And I think that for a lot of kids, that's like a very real thing is that, you know, you have like a bad day and you just want to sleep it off and then you have nightmares and then you're like, fuck. And that's something that happens that I don't think we ever discuss with our kids that like, you know, some days it's going to be real shitty and you're really not going to get any relief and, you know, it's okay. Like it's still going to be okay. Mm-hmm. It might be shitty, but it'll be okay. And I think that's what Paper House does is it's like, you know, real life's going to suck. Sometimes, you know, your dreams are going to suck and sometimes everything around you is going to suck, but it's okay. I don't know.
Yeah,
no, I like that movie a lot.
There's so many great themes throughout this movie, and that's why, like, I'm really glad I bought it because I really do want to watch with the older kids and see their reactions because I think they are going to react strongly to it, especially after I just finished watching it. I think it's going to resonate. So, it's a well done movie. Even you know, we say you know, I'm watching with my kid, you know. With kids, I think this would, if you have no kids or whatever, you're going to resonate with this film. I think it's does such a good job and it's almost timeless. You know, I think anybody can definitely, get something from this.
Oh, yeah.
It's a childhood movie that you probably never saw. Cause I mean, the thing is, I don't hear a lot of people talk about it. You know, very, very few times I actually hear people mention it. And I'm like, oh shit. Yeah. Totally want to watch that again, and finally I did, and I really, really, really like it more than I ever have. So
that's great. That's awesome.
Thank you for thinking I'm great.
Yay! I don't.
All right, let's move along to our next segment. But I forget what did we decide to call this?
Let BJ say it.
It's going to sound so great. So our next segment is something that I came up with the name because I'm witty and brilliant, and it's Vidi. Oh, my God!
Nice. I love it.
I'm never doing that again. You're going to make an intro for that. That is not me saying that.
Vicky.
Well, here we are at last. Right where we ought to be. Video.
Oh my God!
So, Brad, I was unable to get to the film you chose this week.
Great.
I suck. Great. I suck. I know I do.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna I'm gonna turn it over to you, and because I really want to see this movie, and I will make time for it. I promise.
Good.
But, go for it. Introduce the segment here.
Well, kind of the same thing as we talk a lot about movies, and we mainly just talk about films that have recently been on DVD or Blu-ray. But there's a lot of films that have never made the, you know, DVD or Blu-ray appearance. And another film that is tied up with Lionsgate is Girlfriend from Hell, which is, I think what does IVE stand for? Do you remember? But anyways,
nope.
IVE released it, and they got bought up. That was one of, like, IVE, Trimark. They all got bought up by Lionsgate early on, whenever Lionsgate was buying up companies when they were nobody, and obtained all these films. So anyways, Girlfriend from Hell is our first film of this segment. And the reason why I picked this as the first one is recently, just as of last night on August 1st, the musical in New York, they adapted this into a musical, very, very small, like it's like off Broadway, I think. But they did an adaptation of this. I watched some trailers. They're using the original music. They're kind of using that same story, which looks like a ton of fun. So if you're in New York and Girlfriend from Hell's playing, highly suggest it.
And yeah, also, please see it so that I can obsess over it even more than I already am.
And then, as of right now, I've heard that a pilot has been done for the TV show with Leanne Curtis coming back as the girlfriend.
Oh, my God.
But, like, I did use IMDb for this, Sean. On IMDb, I checked last night, it said on the 27th was the air date of July. But I don't see anything of where any TV show played this, so I don't know if it was just kind of for maybe some producers to try to see if it's decent enough or whatever, but there's really no cast that is said other than Leanne Curtis coming back. But anyways, that's the reason why I picked it, because both of those things are happening with such an oddball movie that I don't know if anybody has fucking seen, it seems, because every time I mention it, people have no idea. But it is just such a weird and fucking hilarious movie that got shit on.
And I don't understand. It has no reason to have been shit on. It's much fun.
It's really fucking funny. Like, this is an all-around, like, it's an all-around good comedy. It has a horror aspect to it, but it is just a really crazy slapstick film. It's very basic. The devil is very, you know, kind of just like maybe a spirit. And there's a chaser who is played by Dana Ashbrook, by the way, who is awesome mm-hmm. in everything he does, is basically God's bounty hunter and is after this devil and inhabits Leanne Curtis's character, Maggie. And then, you know, she's a dork. It's, you know, very dorky. Doesn't go on really any dates, doesn't know how to dress, that type of thing. But then as soon as the devil takes her over, she becomes hot shit. And she is really pretty. And she's pretty as a dork, too. And she had the little pigtails and the upside-down eyelashes. I was like, I'd hit it. But anyways.
Oh, my God.
Anyways. It's just an all-around, you know, like I said, fun movie. It's strictly a comedy. It has a killer soundtrack, even though it doesn't really I remember watching it before and not thinking the soundtrack was that great, but rewatching it again, I was like, man, it's really, really catchy. And I can see why they would take these songs and do a musical with it, because it's kind of one of the bigger aspects of the film is especially the Girlfriend from Hell theme. But I don't know. I saw it when I was little on like TBS or something. And I always wanted to know what it was, because I caught it at the very end when they're around the pool. And I caught like the last 15, 20 minutes of it, and I always wanted to know what it was. And it wasn't until years later that I discovered what it was. And I finally found a VHS copy of it at Hollywood Video when they were going out of business. And I was super stoked, and I, you know, still have it. I hope one day that this thing gets a little bit more life, so maybe this TV show and this fucking, you know, play, the musical, will take off, and maybe somebody will release this shit, Lionsgate. But, what?
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, no, so you pretty much said everything that I wanted to say, because I had heard the title, but I'd never seen it. And then it really got my attention with the musical, because that's what I do for a living. So then I wanted to track it down. So when you said, hey, let's watch this, I was like, oh my God, yes, now I have an excuse to do it. And this, if you like Teen Witch, like, this is the ass-kicking best friend of Teen Witch. It's so fucking fun. Sorry for interrupting you.
Oh, no, no, I'm done. I toggle.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, no, I think that this is... I think that it was such a misunderstood movie when it came out because I don't think people were entirely sure how to process it because it is so slapstick that you don't know if they're taking it seriously or not. But this movie has everything that I love about like kind of shitty 80s movies. Like I love the art design and the costume design. I love the music you said is fantastic, which is why I'm really excited to see that they're making it a musical. There's been a big resurgence of kind of cult films turned musicals that are absolutely incredible.
But this isn't even a cult movie. That's the thing.
Heathers, which both. Well, right, it's like a super unknown, but they're starting to pull from that for musicals now. It's kind of fascinating to watch. But I think that they're trying to capture the same audience that really liked the Heathers musical by doing this one. I think that's what they're doing. But the film is so... Because obviously it wasn't alive then. I just don't understand like how this could have gone under the radar.
It's because it was the end of the 80s and beginning of the 90s.
Okay.
And I think that's what it was because we were getting out of the 80s kind of corny, comedies like that. And then the 90s was just god awful for everything it seemed, for movies as well. Just people just didn't get in. They were trying too many new things, and it was, I think, early 90s was bigger with sci-fi and stuff like that. And kitty killers later on. But with this, I think it wasn't released at the right time. I think if this was released like in 86, it would be up there with everything else. But I think 89 was just too late for this type of movie. Also being rated R. And coming out with boobies and stuff because the teens couldn't go see it. It would have to be the adults, and I just don't think there was any aspects to this film that would really trigger that for people to go see if it actually came out in theaters. I can't remember if it did. That's another thing. Is I tried finding any like box office info and I couldn't. So I'm not sure if it did.
It probably was direct to video.
Yeah. Well, IVE put it out, and that's the only release it had. And I don't remember them being kind of a. I thought they were like a direct to video company. I guess I could. Let me check on Box Office Mojo. You can talk, Sean. Tell us how you didn't watch it.
What do you guys think about movies like this that you can't find anywhere about people going to YouTube?
It's tough to say because I'm super anti-piracy, but with, this movie was never released in theaters, apparently. So that's another reason why it just didn't go anywhere.
Because it's on my YouTube watch list along with a couple others, like Night Flyer, Stephen King's Night Flyer. Is that Stephen King?
Yeah, but that's available on DVD, but I think it's been long out of print.
Yeah, like that are on my watch list for YouTube, but I'm conflicted.
Yeah,
I'm the same.
He like died out a little bit with your voice right there. It's kind of funny.
I'm the same. I think that like, sorry.
No, go ahead. Clear with you right now, so go ahead.
I think that it's shitty.
Oh God, here we go.
There are so many films being uploaded to YouTube just because piracy is a huge problem, and I don't like that. But when the films aren't available in any other format and you really can't find them, to me it's almost as if you're still keeping them alive.
Yeah.
Like you're not letting them be forgotten or lost. So that's why I'm okay with it. I mean, I have plenty of friends who make independent films, and then we'll find them on YouTube, and it's like, shit, dude. Like, don't do that. That's taking money out of us. But, like... I don't know. There's just so many films that get lost or destroyed in floods and fires and whatever. And if this is the way that we can
keep them forever, then I'm okay with that.
Cool.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way. I'm super anti-piracy, but in situations like this, like, if you need to preserve the film in any way, like, it needs to be shared amongst people, and then hopefully with as much buzz as it gets with, you know, because, I mean, that's how all these films survive a lot of times, was bootlegs, VHS. I mean, I would buy bootleg VHS all the time, and then, but that's how the word spread around. That's the reason why we have some of these movies that we pick up and we're like, holy shit, this is on Blu-ray now? Like, who the hell would release this? Well, that's the reason why. It's because it's got its name around from bootlegs. And if you still want movies like this to come out, then, you know, it's almost that you have to embrace it. Because, I mean, no one's losing money. Lionsgate isn't losing anything because they've never put this out on DVD or Blu-ray. It's not streaming anywhere other than, you know, illegally on YouTube. So in no way, shape, or form, anybody's losing money on this. You're not pulling money out of the director's not living in some fucking shack. I mean, he could be. Who knows? But, you know, he's not busting. I mean, I think he's still I think he's still a filmmaker, but it's not the point. It's just that you watching on YouTube is not going to pull $10 out of his pocket, or he's going to, you know, he's banking on, you know, residual checks from Girlfriend from Hell or something. So I think you got to look at it to that aspect a little bit.
Hold on, buddy. See what I mean?
Give him a Skittle.
What I was going to say was, like, most of the time these directors aren't getting paid by the distribution company anyway. Because remember, Graydon Clark didn't see any paychecks from Without Warning. You know, from the Screen Factor release. So they're out of the loop as far as distribution goes anyway.
Yeah, I think these films like this that aren't available in any other format, you know, it's not going to hurt anything. I think it takes a little investigation with it. With any film like that, so before you watch anything on YouTube, just look around to see if it's available anywhere, and then go from there.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, it sucks that you have to do it, but you know, if you want these films to live and keep going and be able to see shit like this, then that's the only way. And you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with it at that point.
Yeah, very cool.
Yep.
So everyone, check out Girlfriend from Hell and demand that somebody release it on Blu-ray. Or straight to Vudu. Or at least throw it on Vudu, people.
Yeah, right?
At least get a legit release. It'd be great. All right. I think that's going to do it for this week's show. Everyone.
Tell us how you like the new segments.
Yeah, let us know. Drop us a line on Twitter, Scream_cast. Leave us comments on the website. That's fun. I enjoy getting those from everyone. Or hit us up on Facebook. I believe you can search Screamcast, and you'll see our logo on Facebook.
Actually, you'll probably get this, you know, the cast of Scream first, and then you'll see us.
Right, that always happens. But check out all the other oneofus.net podcasts. They're all fantastic. Go to oneofus.net and choose them there. You can subscribe to their full-on feed where you get every single one of their shows every week. Or you can subscribe to us separately on iTunes through our website over at thescreamcast.com. And, of course, please check out our sponsors page there. There's links to Wolfman of Mars, to Grindhouse Video. There's also a coupon code, Screamcast10, if you order from Grindhouse Video. You get some cash off your order, which is always great. And then Coffee Shop of Horrors, use the coupon code SCREAMCAST to get 10% off your order there. And so all that's on the website, thescreamcast.com, or on the sponsors page. And spread the word about the show. And I want to thank all of you for listening. Nerdly.co.uk, huge thank you to them for spreading the word over there in the UK. And I think I've gotten through those. Do you guys have anything else to add before we close down?
I hate the way you say coupon.
Coupon.
I hate it. Oh, God. Stop.
I will work on it.
Say it naturally. What do you say?
I say coupon code.
Coupon. That's not what I say.
It's coupon. You're both weird. I hate you both.
Coupon code. King Koopa
coupon.
Code.
Coupon.
If you take the on part off, it's coop. So it's coupon.
Wow.
Oh boy. Well,
I think it goes to show that you can't please everyone.
Yep.
All right. And with that, everyone, have a great week. We'll talk to you next time. Bye bye.
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 More of the campfire telling of his horror. Lost in the woods with the madman and the stars. Don't laugh at the tales. Heed if you call him the
Can you hear BJ at all? I can't hear BJ. We got
BJ robot voice.
So many.
I can't hear anything. Can she even hear us?
At the same time.
Oh my God! What is happening?
No.
Okay, you're better now. That was amazing. That's going in the outtakes.
Yes!
I didn't hear anything.
No, I'm not. I don't even know what's happening anymore.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.